Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Jay Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you can't find anything worth listening to on the AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA, and it's a .com, so we have it all from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now, we have the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, pour some more wine, grab another box of chocolates, and enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night.
I'll give us fever.
That's exactly what she's giving me right now. That is Carolyn Martin and her rendition of Peggy Lee's Fever. Oh. And isn't that just spectacular?
Just
clean.
Beautiful.
It's so clean. Hey, this is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio with Bob Brill.
Hey.
And on the phone with Bobby Jean Bell, our unfortunate or fortunate move to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hey, you live in Albuquerque. Is that fortunate or unfortunate?
It varies with the day.
There you go. Well, for those who know Bobby, you just got her giggle. Hey, you know what?
Huh.
I have my realtor over tonight,
yeah.
And he says, hey, do you guys ever mention Game of Thrones on your show? I said, I have never, but I will tonight.
There you go. Done.
It's only two more episodes, and it's finito.
So is he going to do it for 2%?
2.5%.
Oh, well, I'd mention Game of Thrones, too.
Yeah? Yeah, it's 2.5%?
Get him down to 2. See if
he, well, I don't think he's going to go to 2. I think, you know, most of them are like 2.5 to 3. So he's going to do 2.5. So I'm pretty happy with it.
Well, that's good.
So anyway... Hey, Bobby, when you sold your house, what were the points that you paid your realtor?
I think it was more than that.
See, that's what I mean. It's, yeah.
You know,
well, there's so many now.
I'm not remembering, but when we sold real estate in Connecticut back in the 80s, it was 6%.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. No
standard
kidding.
Realtors are still 6, but there's so many cheapy competitors.
Yeah, yeah. The world's different.
Yeah,
so different now.
And the only bad part about that is a lot of the... regular realtors are resisting taking their clients to some of the homes where mm-hmm. they're right. represented some by mm-hmm. somebody that's 2%.
Right. Yeah, right.
And but that's changing too, because the world changes so quickly, and yeah, it's happening, and it's
well, they have. I mean, now they have WeBuyUglyHouses.com.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And there's a couple more like that, and you go, yeah. Wow.
Well, you know, and if you really look at it, I know realtors do a lot of work.
They do.
But you know, if they're selling a house for, let's say, roughly $200,000. They're doing the same work they're selling for $1.4 million, you know, basically, maybe a little bit different. I mean, 6% is a whole lot of money.
Exactly. Well, you know? Well, 2.5% on $1.5 million is a ton of cash.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, if you're looking at 6%, and, you know, they usually end up splitting that with the other
right.
agents.
That's part
so
of
it's
what,
really
you
3%.
Know.
Now, I understand that my house is not worth anything, like, remotely, like $1.5 million.
Well, yeah. Okay.
It's still a very strong market there, though.
It
I'm
is,
sure.
Especially in our neighborhood. We live in a neighborhood in Simi called the Groves, and it's all well kept up, and it's like the houses are really nice, and you know they're just the right size for a starter family and stuff.
Yeah.
Plus, I have the in lot on a cul-de-sac. I have the big wedge.
I'll give you $20 for it.
Really?
Yeah.
You might have a deal. Okay,
we'll cut out the middleman commission too.
I tell you what, I just almost passed out when Bob said he'd buy my house for $20. Jerry, I know you're listening. Make the phone call. Okay, we have tonight on our show a brand new writer. She is from New York City. Actually, she's from Vienna, in England, and then back to Vienna, and now in New York City. Her name is Hermie Handlin. She is, her book is called Chasing Rainbows in NYC, or Chasing Rainbows NYC. And this is not her first novel, but it is the first one that she's had published. And I'll let her give you kind of a little short bio on herself. And she's writing under the nom de plume Eve Wing. So if you're looking for Chasing Rainbows NYC, look for the author as Eve Wing. So please welcome to the writer's block, Miss Hermie Handlin. Okay, you're on.
Okay. So hello, Jim. Hello, Bobby. Hello, Bob.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Hello.
Happy.
It's wonderful having you on the show with us.
I love your accent, too.
Me, too. I was digging it the other night when I was talking to you.
So tell us about
listening to your talk about you know, real estate, and so come on to New York and buy something for $50 million.
No,
how about that?
No,
yeah, but that's only an apartment.
No, I've only been to New York City once, and that was the one time.
I lived in Jersey for a while, and I used to go into New York City every once in a while, and it was great to visit. And then I went to a friend's apartment where he was paying at the time like $3,000 a month, and when I couldn't turn around, and the bathroom was bigger than the kitchen.
Without your teeth hitting the wall.
It was like, okay, I've had enough Manhattan.
Hermie, you were in the entertainment industry for a lot of time. In fact, you booked a lot of acts into the Apollo Theater.
I sure did. Yeah. I had one act particularly, the Manhattans. Some people may remember them. They had a very big hit with Kiss and Say Goodbye. Mm. And I don't know whether anybody remembers that, but it's a very, very big hit. It's on, you know, and we have lots of gold records, a platinum record and a Grammy. So we were rather successful.
Well,
very nice.
The Apollo never really did slow down at all, did it?
No, it sure didn't. And, you know, now, of course, it's sort of it's gentrified now. And they have all kinds of fabulous big stars there. But all the black stars came through the Apollo. You had to go through the Apollo if you wanted to make it, you know.
What are you listening to, Bob?
I'm calling off the Manhattans, Kiss and Say Goodbye.
Oh.
Yeah. And Shining Star also, anyway. So I want to tell you about my novel a little bit.
Yes, we would like for you to give us the basic story, of, if you wouldn't mind.
I will. This is a story, it's not really feminist, but it's about a woman and who has two men, she's trying very hard to. She's very much in love with one, and then with the other, and then with one, and then the other, and eventually she gets really tired of the game that they play with her, or that game she plays with them, you know, and finally drops them, and she meets a third guy whom she marries.
Right.
And eventually she gets shot in Central Park. And it centers around who shot her. So it's a sort of mystery, and it's an adult mystery thriller, to find out who shot her and why. So that's the whole gist of the story.
Well, is it interesting? It was interesting the way you put it, that she had two men back and forth, and she got very tired. I would think that she probably did get very tired.
And then she picked up a third one. Well, you had Gail and Gusty, And who was the third? Jesse? Was that
Jesse?
The third? Yeah.
Yeah, Jesse.
That was Jesse. Jesse's the first one.
Right.
And then she has Gail as
right.
The second one, who was really her first, not her first, but her main love, really.
Right.
And then she has, she drops both of them and marries Christy.
Right.
So.
Well, I have to ask you, did this come from something in your past or something you discovered along the way? Where did the idea come from?
Well, the idea came from meeting a lot of women and listening to, I was a person that all the women came to my friends and said, this and this happened to me and blah, blah, blah. And I heard all their sad stories. And wherever I went, whether I was in England or in Vienna or in New York, they all had the same story to tell. And I had a story of my own too. And so this went on for quite a number of years, and I didn't know what to do with it. And finally, I sat down, and it flowed. And I realized I had it in my I had written it in my mind, actually.
Okay.
So when I sat down, it just flowed, you know. And it was a composition of my friend's story and my my own story
uh-huh.
and my friend's story. Yeah, that's where the idea comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I have the same story that my friend has and that my other friend has, friend has. So it finally came, and I felt I had to say, you know, I had to tell it. And it just flowed. That was it.
Well, I think, Bob and I are both writers, and I think that's the way we feel. When the stories come, we have to write them.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to sit down. It has to come out. And
right.
You have to write it, and you don't really care what happens to it at first. You want it to be a big, big, big hit, but basically you need to write it. That's it.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, we have a phrase we use around here in the writer's block, and it's don't give up your day job.
That's it. And I never did. I never did, no. No, it's something, but, you know, you feel you need to tell somebody.
Sure.
You know? So you write it. So
yeah.
That's it. And I'm happy I did.
Were you able to pull from your experiences at the Apollo and the entertainment field and weave them into this book?
That's going to be a different. That book is already written. That I wrote a long time ago.
Oh, so that's the first one.
Yeah, but it was never published or anything, and it needs a very, very good edit, a very, very good edit before I can, you know, submit it. But that I want to really come out with next, because it's a story of a group that had it so hard because it was in the... No, a lot of groups, of course, singers and so on, they all have it hard. But in those years, it was particularly hard because you couldn't break through into, into the white thing.
Right.
So therefore, it's a little bit different. Yeah.
Right.
Were you there when Buddy Holly performed at the Apollo?
No, that was before I came to the States. Hmm.
Yeah, I know the Motown groups had, but I think a lot of them just preferred to stay Motown. They didn't really want to break into the white. Although the Motown music back then was multinational. I mean, it could go either way.
The Motown was fabulous.
Oh my gosh, they were just
deep place.
Nothing like the Temptations and Smokey Robinson. Oh my God, all those guys were so good, and I used to love to watch them dance.
Yeah, the Temptations and so on.
Right.
And I had a group, you know, they were similar to the Temptations. They were fabulous singers, and five of them, wonderful moves. It was a hard, hard time to get through. I mean, I can't begin to tell. Well, it's in the story.
Right.
You know, we went on a creepy old bus, and no flying, of course, no money for that, and... It was very hard, time to...
Well, they used to travel on tour buses.
Yeah.
We didn't have a tour bus. I had to go begging for money to buy a Mercedes bus, where we sat upright for hours and hours and hours on end. Yeah.
All right, little side note that Al Kasha, Academy Award winning songwriter, who won two Academy Awards, who also wrote the music for Lancer, my Lancer music, wrote a lot of hits for black artists. Matter of fact, Mama Said, There'll Be Days Like This, that, and a whole bunch. And he was telling me one day when I was interviewing him years ago, he said, and he's white and he's Jewish and from Brooklyn, he said that for years people thought he was black because he wrote so many of the hits for that at that time for the black artists.
Right.
And it was just on and so forth. So you had that as well as, black artists trying to break through and write their own music as well.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, the black, like my group, they were all writers, the five of them. Well, actually, eventually four because one dropped out. But the four, they were fabulous, fabulous writers. But I was associated, first of all, with somebody that you may have heard of, Teddy Randazzo and Don Costa. Don Costa was Frank Sinatra's conductor for many years.
Oh, Don Costa,
Don Costa, And then Teddy Randazzo wrote, I Think I'm Going Out of My Head, Hurt So Bad. He's a Hall of Fame writer. And they write some fabulous music. And he wrote for Anthony and the Imperials, Tears on My Pillow, and stuff like that.
Tears on My Pillow, Pain in My Heart Over You. Okay. I have a question for you.
Yes.
If you were to have to guess, and you probably know this answer, if you were to have to guess what the basic message of this book is, besides just pick one, what would it be?
Well, it's the basic message is that you guys are terrible and we women are wonderful.
Does your husband know this?
Bobby Jean, your turn.
And I think Bobby will agree with me.
Well, I'm going to jump in here for a moment.
Yes, I want you to.
I'm not able to talk about music and such because that's just not my purview. but not the music you're all talking about. Yes. I had several thoughts as a reader that I just wanted to share with you, I guess. This book is full of really steamy scenes. I don't know, gentlemen, if we've read anything in 204 episodes of The Writer's Block that has so many.
No.
So many
steamy
scenes.
I can tell you right up front, no.
it's an adult. You know, I must tell you one thing. I'm really, I'm not a prude, but what I'm saying is I don't know how to explain this. This came out of me. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Maybe because the emotion was rekindled.
Well, as you shared, you've heard a lot of stories from women over the years as well. It's a really interesting cast of characters, I thought. And I was a little, I felt like you really were doing a little twist and turns there. You start off the book with a bang. And it's not even a spoiler alert because we get it like right up front that this woman is, and we get her name and all, and she's been shot. And then we go to a writing class. And I thought it was so interesting that Ariella, your main character, is also a writer. And as someone who's really a reader and not a writer, but involved in interviewing lots of writers over the last several years, to me, you give us a lot of really good nuggets for writers through Ariella. So tell us a little bit about why you chose to have her be a writer.
Well, I'll tell you what, because actually I've been writing on and off my whole life, sort of, but I was always busy with something else. My husband was a writer, so he was the first one I would peddle his books. Then I had my best friend, I peddled her book. Then I had my sister in England, I peddled her book.
Okay.
And so I got a little familiar, with the writing process and with what makes a writer and what should and shouldn't be done. That's where you get the familiarity with the writer from that.
Early on, you say to either one of the students or to Monica, and you say, you don't understand, it's a product. You have to write a product. And we've had that conversation
with some
writers and editors about you have to be somewhat detached from it emotionally as the writer, because it's a product.
Right.
You're just creating a product to sell, you know?
You're so absolutely right. I have somebody here now. People in the building know that I used to be this, that, and the other. And she's been with. She's a musician, but a writer also. She writes all her own songs. And she keeps at me and saying, please manage me. And I keep saying to her, you've got to get a manager. And she keeps thinking to go to these people and say, look at my stuff and blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, they're interested in where's the money? They're not interested in your, I'm very familiar with that. That the writers think this is my stuff, and I got to talk about it, and I got to do this, and I got to do that. That's how I'm familiar with all that, yeah.
Well, so. And I also felt Ariella is very articulate in she reads books like Cosmos, was that by Carl Sagan?
Yes.
And she has a lot of some of the references to conversations that she had with Gail, they had to be very heady. They talk a lot about science and astronomy and other, and so she's a very complex character, I think, that you've created there.
Thank you for saying so. Very nice.
Well, but she is caught with fever. Man, she's got to have those guys.
I know, huh? She's kind of a trollop when you really get down to it.
I realize that came through eventually. And to think that I would write something like that is so strange, really strange.
How interesting.
Absolutely. It just, came out of me. So that's, I guess, who I am. I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe I am.
One facet of you.
Well, I'm nothing to matter with it.
One last question, and then, gentlemen, I'll be quiet.
No, go ahead.
No.
We're enjoying the conversation.
You're kidding. I'm enjoying this conversation.
I'm sorry, what? Oh.
We're enjoying it.
I'm so interested that I'm assuming, okay, so the detectives are, looking around for clues, and they find this 1,000 pages of a document in a safe. And I'm assuming the document that they find, is that basically her story that we're reading? Because it's not written like a diary. It's in third person. Yeah.
It was 2,000 pages, and that's what I spent my life when I had time writing. Yes. I documented a lot of this stuff in the diary, and that's what they found. Yeah. But I'm very surprised that I come out like a lustful broad.
It's your alter ego.
Well, I have to say that Ariella is somewhat of a trollop. She's a busy girl.
She is a busy girl.
Well, it's so strange, really, because a couple of years before, when I had sent something, a manuscript, and to L.A., and the guy came back to, here's a contract, blah, blah, blah. And he said, but we need to change it. I say it in the book anyway. And he said, you got to call it something different, And he used very bad language. And I was totally shocked in those years. Totally shocked, and had nothing to do with it. Didn't have any sex scenes in it this way. So I don't know where it came from.
And
it may have been
50
Shades of Grey that influenced me.
There you go. Or 50 Shades of Rainbows.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly glad that Bobby is here to ask a lot of these questions because we can't.
Well, Bob and I are sitting here red-faced right now, so.
Well, it's wonderful that, you're getting this out, and, you know, So much of writing, you know, the really best writing comes from, and I'm not saying personal experience, but that inner self that you want to tell that most people will say, I can't tell that.
Afraid to tell.
Yeah, they're afraid. Or they have relatives or that, you know, I can't let my kid read this. You know, I remember the very first book I wrote that had some sex scenes in it. My daughter read and it was like, she wanted to slap me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was a little younger.
As a matter of fact, I haven't yet let any of my friends read it because they're very prudish or whatever. I'm very fearful of that, you know, so I put it everywhere but to my friends, you know, so I didn't feel good about it.
Well, I would let one friend read it and have her give you her honest opinion.
Is that why you chose to write under an alias?
Yes. I did not. I have a feeling. God forbid it makes a noise. Then immediately people would know, and I did not want. Once I'd finished it, when I wrote it, I felt nothing at all about it, about saying these things and, you know, at all. Yeah. Only my feelings came out.
Right.
And then when I read it to edit it a little bit before I sent it off to the real edit, I said, oh, my God. And then I decided to use a different name, obviously. I didn't think it would come out that way.
Well, but it did, and you know, it's a good story. So, and actually is germane to the storyline, if you really think about it. Wouldn't you say, Bobby?
Well, I'm sorry, say again?
I said the hot and heavy sexual undertones are actually germane to the book, so it's
okay.
They are.
So
absolutely necessary.
I
just felt pulled this way and that, you know.
It establishes some points of order that, you know, otherwise wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right. That's correct. Well, I'm so glad that you're not totally shocked.
Oh no, believe me.
You know, as I said, this is the age of 50 Shades of Grey. So there you go.
Well, you know, there's a big bravo that goes out to you.
Exactly. It takes a lot to shock us.
Thank you very much.
Really, truly.
I thank you very much for that. But I don't know how it's received. My sister, she found it in Vienna, and my nephew found it in Manila, and they didn't say anything about it. They didn't. They said they bought it, and that's it.
Okay,
they read it.
I don't.
Have they talked to you since?
What? No, I'm on Facebook. They have not mentioned it. So I guess they're embarrassed.
Well, no, they probably haven't had time to read it because it's not a short book and it's not a long book, but it's a shorter book that acts like a long book. I guess you know what I mean. Bobby knows what I mean.
Yes.
Well,
there's
also, like, when I was mentioning that she reads the book Cosmos and stuff, she has a lot of what I guess I will call maybe not profound thoughts, but she writes with great observation. There's one line that I think is written more than once, and it's a very simple line. The absence of a presence will crush the strongest soul. And
bless you, Bobby, that you picked that up. Picked up on that.
I'll tell you, you know, all books are personal. At some point in our lives, we're reading something and something will jump off the page that other people might not see. We lost my dad a few years ago and my mom's 95 now. And she says things like this to me because even though we're writing about a young woman and so forth in her life, my mom, they would have been married almost 75 years when we lost my dad. And she will say something almost like this. And so every time you put this in the book, my heart rushes to my mom and to anyone out there who has been so accustomed to having a soul, a partner, a living, breathing person with them, or a pet, or anything that you gave love to, when it's gone, that's exactly, your soul is crushed. It actually helped me understand more about how my mom probably is today.
I'm very happy for that. That was one of the most impressive lines that I read in a book. I mean, that whole book, blah, 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 whatever, whatever. I came to that part. It just struck me because it struck a chord in me so badly, you know. It really, really struck a chord in me. And then I was so, I sent it to my friend, or my friend gave it to me when I sent it back. She said, did you read the part totally away from this? You know, it's incredible. It was just an incredible line. And I bless you for having picked up on it. Yes, I really mean it, because it struck a very very strong chord in me.
Okay, we're gonna break here real quick. And we'll come back and talk some more about process now. But the book, I have to tell you, the book is Chasing Rainbows NYC. The author is Eve Wing. You'll find it on Amazon. I did. All online booksellers. And Bobby Jean, do you have your ad?
I do.
Well,
when you open your closet door, do you say, I need something new? Or do you say, I haven't got anything to wear? Or, if only I had, what would you like to see when you open that door? Boots, hats, cool shirts, boho tops? Out West Shop will revive your wardrobe with new fresh looks for men and women, all with great style in comfortable fabrics and for every occasion. Shop www.outwestshop.com. Enter coupon code SPRING and save $10 on your order. Call toll-free 1-877-340-9378 for personal attention. Out West delivers style door to door, coast to coast, and around the world. And remember, it's always a great day out West.
You are leaving on vacation. Your tickets have been purchased.
Very good.
Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services, including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training if it's wanted. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. And we already know it's the dog. Always the dog. Damn dogs. Okay. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet clients' goals. So that's Creative Edge, your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson and Avery Olive are publicists. Go to their website, and it's Creative Edge. Look at it or Google it, Creative Edge.
Okay.
And you can find them. Great people. They're the publicists for Bob and I both.
And Mickey just posted something online.
Oh, did he? What did he
post? He's not listing, because he posted, "Arg! Bruins look horrible today."
Oh, God.
he's obviously Canadian.
Well, he got his glasses back so he can see what he's doing now.
Boston Bruins.
Okay, it is 7:34. We're back in the studio. Of course, you can tell that we have Bob Brill here. Bobby Jean is on the phone, and we're on the phone with Hermie Hanlon. And if you want to call and talk to Hermie tonight, the number in the studio is 818-602-4929. And that number, again, is 818-602-4929. Bobby Jean, I had to ask you what that number is because you had it memorized there for a while.
Which number? I'm sorry.
Studio number.
Creative Edge.
Studio number, Bobby.
Oh, the studio number. Oh, my gosh. Hold on. It's the same number it always was, right?
818-602-4929. Come on.
You got it, right? I'm multitasking. I'm trying to look up Creative Edge.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's Creative Edge Publicity. All right. Okay. Hermie, I have a question, and the question is, how long did it take you to write? Now, this is your second novel, first one published. How long did it take you to write this book?
Well, to write it, it took a year.
Okay.
Actually, because I couldn't devote myself to it. But as I said, I had it in my mind for many years. So it actually wrote it in my mind. But it took about a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to, you know.
Is that with editing and everything?
Research.
That's with the editing and everything?
But yeah, yes. Well, yeah. No, not with the editing.
Ah, okay.
The research that I had to do, you know, what was this, and, you know, to make sure you get your data right and stuff like that.
Sure.
Now, the editing was additional then. That took another, because that was out of the house, you know.
Uh-huh.
This was with the so-called publishing company that I have.
Okay. And
so, yes.
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah. So it took a year because I couldn't, you know, I had to do it like at night quickly when I came home and from work because I do work, and so it takes. I couldn't just sit down and, you know, write it.
Uh-huh.
I had to do it in piecemeal. Yeah.
Well, that's what again. Sorry, never give up your day job.
Yeah.
Did you find right. Did you find the writing process fun, or did you find it grueling?
No, I find it incredible fun. I love it. I really, really, really love it. I love to write. I really do. So it there was no part of it that I found tiresome or too difficult, even digging out stuff and everything. I just love it. I really do. Yeah.
Did you?
I don't know why I didn't become a writer, because I always wanted to write. I don't know why life does that to you, but I seem to be caught up with immediate things. You
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
this has to be done and that has to be done, and I don't know. I didn't become a writer.
Things like paying bills, right?
Yeah.
Well, yes. Actually, yes. Actually, yes.
What is your favorite time to write?
Well, in the evening.
Okay.
Yeah, in the evening. It's I have a reasonably nice apartment where I can see Midtown all lit up, and it's pretty. So it's quiet and pretty.
Uh-huh.
And,
That's
when I started did my writing.
Are you in Manhattan itself?
I'm in Manhattan. Yes. I'm in the sort of almost in the middle. Yeah, I can see Times Square from my window.
Oh wow!
Oh, so you can watch the ball drop on New Year's Eve.
Yes, I do. I do.
Oh wow!
And you don't have to fight the crowds of the pens.
Oh, the millions of people that go down there.
No, I don't.
Wow.
No, I don't have to. It's incredible the way they, you know, hang together there, a million people. But when you're young like that, I did it when I was young, and then my husband brought me here. The first thing we did, we came actually New Year's, December 30th, December 30th. And on December 31st, I stood in that crowd. Something.
That must really have been an experience that you're never going to forget.
Mm-hmm.
No. So.
Even if you fall down, you can't fall down because everybody's shoulder to shoulder.
There you go.
Oh, you can't. No, you can't. And you can't go to the toilet either.
My wife told me about that. Yeah, she said she
that went. Becomes a problem after a few hours.
Well, maybe you want to put that in your next book.
Yeah, right.
Toilet humor in Hermie's book. We like it.
Yeah.
The suffragette.
By the way, I haven't heard from Bob. Where's Bob?
He's right here.
I'm right here. I was the one that asked you about the pens.
That was
me.
Right.
Yeah, that was me. Hey, I'm right here, Hermie.
Yeah, he's sitting over here chuckling away.
Because I'm waiting for Jim or Bobby to ask you the next question, which is the question that always comes up at this
Well, moment. That would be Bobby's job. So, Bobby, while you're sitting
okay,
there.
Okay, here's our question. Do you ever experience writer's block? And if you do, how do you get around it? And if you don't, do you believe it's possible and you just have never experienced it?
No, I've absolutely experienced it very severely. And I sometimes weeks, you know, like 2-3 weeks pass before I can. There's one thing that I just can't get over it. And it takes a time to, you know, I walk in the park and that's where I do a lot of my thinking and sort of start swirling around. And sometimes I think I would never get over it. God, you know, it's absolute. Writer's block is true. Yes, it's a real thing. Yeah.
What causes you to finally break through it? What would you say gets you past it?
Well, lots and lots of thinking. And as I said, I walk in the park in the morning and start thinking about it day after day, and a couple of weeks pass, and suddenly it comes like, gee, how could I not think of this? It sort of, I don't know, it just comes down. I can't explain it.
It sounds like
you have like an aha moment. You have some kind of an aha moment, and the sky's open, and you rush home and get back to work.
Yeah, no, really. It's so strange. It's so strange how it comes to you.
It sounds like you probably don't write with an outline. Am I wrong with that?
Well, not to begin with. I have it in my head. This and this and this and that and this and this and this and that. Not in any sequence particularly, but I think of this and I think of that and so on and so forth. And then, as I said, when I sat down after all that time, after years actually, it flowed. It absolutely flowed out of me with a couple of, this writer's block thing that you absolutely do stop for. But other than that, it just flows, you know, as if, I don't know. I really can't explain it. But it had been in my head, and I sorted it out in my head already. You know the way you go on a vacation, you sort out, you get the tickets and you get the hotel and you do this and you do that in your head. And then you go to the phone and it sort of, you know, comes to you. That's, I don't know.
Oh, not me. I got to write it down or we don't go anywhere.
Very strange.
Well, I do use my phone to write down, take notes, or I'll be driving down the road and have to pull off, or maybe just talk into my phone and record and to get something that pops into my head that I know I'm going to use.
Oh no! If you mean that way, yeah, I have files and files full of tiny little notes. I would wake up in the morning in my bed and say, oh gee, and write something down. Oh, absolutely. That way I would, you know, but putting it together, that's it, you know. So yes, I do. I have voluminous notes, note taking, you know. It comes to you, oh, this and this has to go in and this and this has to go in, and yes. And that way I do make an outline.
There you go. Now, if you were asked to give, now that you have published your first novel, if you were asked to give a new writer some advice, what would that advice be?
Well, first of all, my advice to the writer is to write something that he knows about. You know, not just any old subject, or maybe, you know, not to depend on the market to say, oh, this is what... A lot of writers come and say, you know, well, this is hip at the moment, and this I can write this, and this will go, and this will be a hit, and so on. So to write something you really, really know about, mm-hmm. because it comes through on the page whether you are into it, you know, whether you really feel that kind of thing.
Sure.
And that's what I would say to the writer. Write what you know about and write truthfully. Write truthfully.
Okay. What are you reading right now?
Yeah, that's absolutely what the only message I really have to begin with, for a writer.
So what are you reading personally right now? Reading?
Well, I read science magazines.
You do?
And I'm interested in the universe. I'm really interested in the universe, and I'm a member of the Mars Society, have been for 30 years, ever since it started. And that's actually all I can read, because you have the TV with news and, you know, everything comes in on you.
Right.
In my work. And I've stopped reading fiction. Because at my age, all I need to read is something for real, you know. So autobiographies and stuff like that. I'm interested in people who are successful, their stories, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did they get successful? And they all have the same thing, you know. You know, you have to have persistence with it, obviously.
Right.
And belief.
Right.
Well, if I may go back to the beginning of our conversation, can I play a little bit of something like this?
I called you here today for a bit of bad news.
Oh, my goodness.
I won't be able to see you anymore.
Manhattan's. Yeah.
I can't believe it.
I had that sitting there, and I said I had.
He's going to play it. By God, he's going to play it come hell or high water.
Guys, that's beautiful. Thank
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, look, we're out of time, so I'd just like to thank you so much for staying up late. I know it's almost 11 o'clock. Oh, no. Yeah, almost 11.
No,
thank you for staying up and chatting with us, and we really appreciate your time.
You've been such fun, and you promised me fun, and it is fun.
There you go.
Okay,
what are you going to do? You can't
really
ask for anything more.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, you're never going to read a biography on any one of us three.
One thing about Jimmy keeps his promise.
Unless I write my own, then it would be an autobiography. Okay.
thank you so much for having me.
It was our pleasure. Our pleasure. And it's Hermie Hamlin. Her book is called Chasing Rainbows NYC. She writes under the nom de plume Eve Wing. You can find her book on Amazon, all online booksellers, and apparently in the Philippines as well.
Oh, there you go.
So there you have it. Hermes, thank you again so much for joining us.
Good night.
Have a wonderful evening.
Real fun.
Oh, I'm glad you had a good time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night, Bobby. Good night.
Good night.
Good morning.
Yeah. Ciao. Okay.
Well.
Hermie Hamlin.
It was fun.
quite the lady. I can't imagine somebody writing a book and being surprised that she put sex scenes in it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we talked about the fact that as a writer, you know, you write about stuff that maybe is relatable to you,
uh-huh.
and you're afraid to bring out. And she writes in a nom de plume,
right.
and her relatives haven't talked to her since.
I know, it's amazing. And you know, I have to tell you that the first sex scene that I read in that book today, I thought, oh my God, BJB is going to be coming unglued.
I'll never read the word wiggle again. The wiggles, yes. The wiggle always have a different meaning to me now. You just have to read the book to find out what we mean by that.
Right. absolutely.
There you
I'm
go.
I'm so sorry I came out. You know, I really am. I don't know. I really cannot help what came out. Sorry
well,
about
that's
that.
Okay. So, it was a delightful story, and I don't think anybody was sorry we read it. So.
So, I had to get up and fan myself a few times. Yeah, I'm
sure.
To walk around the block.
Okay.
Well, okay. Next week.
All right.
Next week
well,
we're.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye bye.
I appreciate the exposure. Bye bye.
It was a pleasure. Next week we have Jennifer Landell. She is a Mickey client. So we get to talk about Mickey to her.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We'll talk about hockey, too.
Her name of her book is Alenia's Song. It's an overture. And it's Bobby, this one is 411 pages.
Well, I think we got it today.
We did. Jerry sent it out today. Yeah. And
yeah,
so
well,
she'll
we'll
be with us.
We'll be reading it tonight.
She'll be. You know, you finish one, you got to dive into another one.
Into the next one.
Yep. And then we have a special writer's block coming up on the 21st. And then, which is Russ's friend. I don't recall her name real fast, but I'm sure I will by next week. And then, of course, Russ will be with me the following Thursday. And that will be his last night on the show. And then he's getting married June 1st.
Oh, really?
So yeah. he and Karen are going to be going to Yellowstone and tie in the knot. And I believe his sister-in-law is going to be doing the ceremony.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, and they love Yellowstone. So if it's still there, it hasn't blown up yet, they're probably going to get married there. So other than that, you got anything, got anybody have anything really important to say before I sign off?
I'm good. Can't think of anything right off the top of my head.
Okay, Bobby?
Oh, I do. Do you know what tomorrow
raise your hand,
is a
Bobby,
very
raise
important
your hand.
Anniversary?
What's that?
Tomorrow is a very important Western anniversary. Do you know what it is?
The
May
promontory.
10th.
Is that the promontory?
Oh, the spike. Yeah, the spike.
Yes,
promontory
yes,
promontory
yes.
point.
Yep,
yep, yep.
Golden spike.
Well, you know, the Tuesday night, the 21st, is our actual fourth year anniversary.
Yes, it is.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So I'll leave it to you to figure out how many shows that is, Bobby. I don't know. Or
200 books. And tonight was 203, I think.
Do you keep a tally?
I do. I post it on our website.
Oh, you do?
Every week when I put up the next, you know, reminder of the next show, I put up what show number it is. So.
Gotcha. Oh, very good, Chief. You're so organized. I'm lucky I remember how to get here. Okay, for Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Bob Brill in the studio right here staring at me, and myself, Jim Christina, we have killed another Thursday night, and we, folks, are out of here.